This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to an edition of iFanboy Talksplode with Jay Ferber, writer of Noble Causes, Dynamo 5, Gemini, and more. So I'm here with Jay Ferber, a writer of many Image Comics. How you doing, Jay?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing all right, hanging in. So so we've been trading emails back and forth, and we're talking about getting together to do a phone interview, and now seemed like an appropriate time because there seems to be a big change in the Ferber universe.
There is.
Yeah, so Noble Causes. So tell us what the status of Noble Causes is.
We are wrapping it up. Noble Causes is going to come to a close in November with issue 40, which is really more like issue, I think, 53, if you count the miniseries, if you add everything up.
Right.
So we've had over 50 issues, and just decided that it's time to put it away for a while.
So is that because it's been less than a year since the relaunch, the issue 32, it was relaunched, and we had the kind of skip ahead.
Right.
So were you just kind of done creatively, or was it a combination of that plus sales, or what was the?
Yeah, no, I mean it was mainly that I was just done creatively. I just had a harder time each issue coming up with stuff to do and yeah. New things to do with the characters. And you know, I thought for a time that introducing Doc's new wife and her kids, that would give, you know, me a boost creatively. And it did a little bit, but at the same time, it just, you know, I just felt like it wasn't firing on all cylinders, or at least it was now, but I didn't know how long I could sustain it. And so I just figured, you know, I'd rather go out strong, because reviews have still been really good on the book. And I'd rather go out strong than just, you know, start phoning it in and have, you know, the book kind of peter out. That's just terrible if that happens. So, yeah, I just decided to finally, you know, pull the pin and write an ending to this soap opera, which is kind of weird because it's not a book like Why the Last Man, you know, where it's something that has, you know, we're working towards a conclusion. I mean, I designed the book to just go until I was tired of writing it. And, you know, so it's not really going to have a finite ending, but there will be a you know, definitely a finale, a send-off for the characters.
Right. Yeah, because I found it really interesting because, I mean, the theme of this summer in comics seems to be around creator-owned comic books, you know, much because of the comments of Robert Kirkman from a couple of weeks ago and things like that. But I found it interesting that you were one of the first guys doing this creator-owned thing years ago with Noble Causes, given the Image Comics, you know, kind of a model of comics publishing a chance.
Yeah.
And it's very rare that you see a a creator, you know, kind of pack it up and kind of move on. Was that, you know, and this is kind of your baby. I mean, from our talking and stuff like that, you've got a lot of books in print, but this is the one that you have, you know, kind of grown from the ground up. So, you know, was it weird to kind of say, okay, you know, I'm really done with it, or, you know, this kind of thing that you envisioned to go on for a long time?
It is weird, and it is, I don't even know if it's fully hit me yet. I mean, I haven't written the last issue yet, and I've come close to tying up the book a couple times in the past, and, you know, to varying degrees, and it's to the point where it's kind of a joke amongst my friends. I mean, I was telling Brian Vaughn that, yeah, I'm done, you know, we're going to end Noble Causes, and he's just laughing, and he's like, yeah, I've heard that before, and it's been solicited, and he's seen interviews now, and he's like, I still don't believe it. When the book comes out, I will believe that you're actually ending it, but until that happens, I don't believe you, and, I'm pretty committed to wrapping it up now, but it's not a decision I took lightly, and it is going to be weird. I mean, I've still, you know, I'm not killing the characters off. They're not going to be unreachable. They'll still be able to show up as guest stars in Dynamo 5 and you know, new stuff I have coming up. So, you know, it's not that finite a thing. And who knows? We're not ruling out a miniseries someday, but, you know, the monthly grind of Noble Causes is a thing of the past for the time being, at least.
And it's not like they're not your characters that you can I mean, you're going to put them on the shelf. You can take them off whenever you like. And
Exactly. And it's by no means, you know, me, you know, throwing in the towel of an image or creating own books or anything. I've still got Dynamo 5. I've still got Gemini still coming out. Yildiray, the artist on Noble Causes, and I are definitely going to do a follow-up. We haven't decided what the book is yet, but, you know, we're going to launch something new, you know, when Noble Causes ends to take its place. So it's, you know, I'm still very much committed to doing that stuff.
Yeah, because Noble Causes, it's interesting to see how the shift has been, because Noble Causes has always been kind of the linchpin book of the Faberverse, as we like to call it. But it's been interesting to see Dynamo 5 kind of rise up and kind of almost overshadow it's the book that it spun off from. So that must make, you know, makes it a little easier to kind of close up shop so you can focus on Dynamo 5. And I want to get to that, but before I get to that, I still want to talk a little more about Noble Causes. So that's the, you know, that's a book that's had a lot of plot, you know, plot points and a lot of storylines. Are you going to attempt to wrap everything up, or is it all going to make sense, or is it going to you're going to leave some things hanging?
It's there's going to have to be stuff left hanging. I mean, just because of the nature of the book, like I said, it's not something that was ever designed to, you know, be taken as a whole. It is a soap opera that it ebbs and flows and things come and go. You know, a lot of the more recent storylines will be wrapped up, but there's some long hanging danglers that, you know, the biggest being the whole stuff with Zephyr and her baby that, you know, I'm just not going to get a chance to wrap up. You know, that's been on the back burner for ages now, years, literally. but a lot of the more recent stuff, and I'm even introducing some new elements just in the last few issues that will then pay off in the final issue, some last minute surprises. And it should be, I mean, I don't want to give away anything, but the book up until the very last page is going to be very true to its kind of soap opera roots. So it'll be an interesting finale and could possibly tick off some people.
Oh, nice, even better. That's a good way.
We like to get a reaction out of people.
That's a good way to go out. So I guess it's really important that if somebody reading Noble Causes now, not to just stop now because it's actually going to be worth it.
It's not one of these, you know, oh, it's going to end, so we're just going to bail now. No, you'll want to stick out for the next few issues. It's going to be worth it.
So has Noble Causes kind of – the experience in Noble Causes, you know, kind of – because you've had a lot of start-stop, and you've experimented with collecting it and very – you know, kind of the archives format and things like that.
Right.
Has that really been kind of your – you know, your kind of primer for being a creator-owned? Because when you're – and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're doing the kind of books that you're doing in Image, not only are you writing them, but you're basically almost acting as your own editor or publisher. Because
to an extent, Image definitely is there to, you know, give guidance and you know, they have veto power over, you know, what actually gets published. I mean, if I want to do a hardcover collection, you know, oversized thing, and they didn't think it would make money, they'd say, you know, I don't think so. That's not going to make money.
Right.
But yes, there is an amazing amount of freedom. And I mean, when I launched Dynamo 5, it was fantastic to be able to basically learn, you know, take everything I've learned in Noble Causes and put that towards launching a book. Because, you know, if I had a chance to do things over with Noble Causes, there's definitely things I would do differently. You know, I wouldn't have done the series of miniseries format. I would have kept it as an ongoing series, you know, from the get-go. And, you know, just stuff like that, just little format things that I played around with and finding out what works and what doesn't. And, I mean, the biggest thing that fans like, I mean, that's crucial, is just consistency. Is just, you know, get the damn book out every month and, you know, when you say you're going to. And so that's, you know, that's one of the things we try really hard to do.
Right. And so like those format changes, like doing the series of miniseries and things like that, were those, you know, you said that those were the kind of things you played with. Were those your own decisions, or was Image, you know, did Image say, let's do some miniseries, or, you know?
No, that was all, I mean, most of the big decisions were mine. You know, doing it, because it was originally launched as an ongoing series.
Right.
And then Pat Gleason, after four issues, you know, got scooped up by DC. And so we had to have an artist change. And I think at the time I thought, well, you know, if we have to change artists, why don't we just do a mini series and we'll do that. We'll get a new number one and that'll boost numbers and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, Ian Richardson took over for the second mini series, and then so we did. Then we did a third mini series, and Ian had to bail partway into that. He got really sick, and that's the one that we went black and white with for that third mini series.
Right.
You know, in an effort to cut costs and you know, because of the numbers. And then it was after that mini series, after the third mini series, that I really was about to throw in the towel. And it was Image that convinced me to stick with it. Eric Stevenson specifically said, "Look, you know, if you do this book as a monthly color series with a good artist and, you know, get it out on time, I think we have something here." And he really prodded me and helped me find an artist. And that's when the monthly series started. And so it was, you know, none of those decisions were really dictated by Image. Eric just really, you know, kind of was a cheerleader and helping me get it going at that point.
Right. So, I mean, and it's interesting because looking back at the series now, I mean, it's not, I mean, you know, it's oftentimes I feel as if Noble Causes doesn't get the credit it deserves because of the different artists and the different miniseries and, this, like I said, the starts and stops. But at the end of the day, you're going to have 53 issues under your belt, which is a pretty good run.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a
damn good run.
Yeah.
For a book that's a superhero book that's not Marvel and DC. I'm proud of it, put it that way.
Right.
And we also, speaking of the archives, before I forget, you know, we have the first archives out, which is like 600 pages. And we held back the second archives because I knew I was going to end the book at that point. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to resolicit the second volume to include everything.
Oh,
so the second volume will be up to the end of the series.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So then when all is said and done, you'll have the entire series in two nice, thick, you know, the second volume will probably be closer to 700 pages.
Right.
Just with the extra issues in there. So it'll be a pretty nice package in two big chunks. And we're still going to do the trade paperbacks. So I think it'll be 10 trade paperbacks in all. So
that's
a pretty big chunk.
That's like Why the Last Man, man. You know, like that's, you know.
Exactly. But Noble Causes was there first. So
yeah.
Brian copying me again.
So, I mean, so that's great. So kind of, I kind of want to go back for, you know, any of our listeners who weren't reading Noble Causes, who might go check it out in the trades or whatever. What drew me to it was the premise of the book, was the idea of, you know, we always joke that superhero books like the X-Men, stuff like that, are soap operas, and you just kind of went and said, no, I'm going to own it, and this is a superhero soap opera. What were kind of the origins of that idea? Because I know you did a lot of work at Marvel in the 90s, and you wrote some of the X books and things like that. How did you come up with the idea for Noble Causes?
It was really just, I mean, I was, for a time, a pretty big soap opera fan. I mean, I still like the medium, isn't the right word, neither is genre, but I mean, I still like the idea of the daily soaps. I'm not watching any right now because there's nothing I really like, but I like that format of just these sprawling, never-ending stories with large casts. And, you know, on soap operas, because they have so much time to fill, the characters can be much more nuanced and have greater depth than just the good guy and the bad guy. I mean, the good guys have their faults and the bad guys have their virtues. And that was one of the things I wanted to do with Noble Causes, that, you know, none of the heroes are purely heroic and none of the bad guys are pure evil. It's everything is kind of shades of gray. And, And I also, you know, in doing so many superhero books at Marvel and DC, I grew tired of having to work in the villain and the fight scene every issue.
Right.
And so Noble Causes, I was like, well, if I make it about a big family, and I, you know, I don't need a supervillain every issue because the family is their own enemy. The conflicts all happen within the family. And so you have all these family rivalries, sibling rivalries, parental, children, romantic, all this stuff. And I just thought it was a good engine to drive this story that you know, I wouldn't, it could be much more character driven and less villain of the month driven. And that was, you know, and then, you know, the hook was that you had this normal girl who marries into this family of superheroes. And so we see things through her eyes as, you know, this kind of sane person in this insane world.
Right.
And then we just ran with it.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned it because you said you were into the daytime soaps. And what drew me to it is because I was into the nighttime soaps and that, like, I grew up, I watched 90210 and Dawson's Creek and Party 5. And so, like, that was kind of, sure. I was like, oh, this is the comic for me. It was.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
So were there moments in the characters' histories or moments in the stories that you wove that you kind of, you know, again, you said you could go back, change things, stuff like that. Were there kind of storylines or story arcs that you would have liked to pursue that you know, for whatever reason you didn't, or were you happy with how the story developed through the run?
No, I'm pretty happy with how the story developed. Yeah. I mean, part of the reason that we're ending, I guess, is because I don't have anything left that I want to explore that I haven't had a chance to. You know, if I did, you know, I'd still be doing it. So I don't really have any regrets of not being able to do stuff.
Right. So when you sit down and look at all the two volumes or all 53 issues and kind of pull back your paper from, you know, your notes when you first started, it kind of matches up, or you accomplished everything you wanted to, or?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, there are certainly ideas that I never pursued, but that's not so much that I didn't want to, it just went in a different direction. But and I tend to usually kind of overwrite the notes that I keep, so it's kind of like a running journal, so I don't really have too much to look back on at all. It's kind of eaten up as I go.
But
I mean, I'll look back occasionally and see some notes for things that I was going to do that I didn't, but, you know, something else was done that kind of accomplished the same thing, so it wouldn't really make sense to do it again.
Right. Because I'm fascinated by the concept of one creator kind of guiding the ship on a book like this, or like what BKV did on Y, or, you know, these other kind of these long runs, or what Rick Remender is doing on Fear Agent, things like that. And and how much of the story, how much control over the story do you have versus how much, you know, or does the story control you?
Yeah. It depends. I mean, at times the story controls us. I mean, there are and the fans to an extent too. I mean, not that I'm pandering, but you know, definitely some characters take off as fan favorites and others don't. And you know, like Frost in Noble Causes was always a big favorite, and so he ended up becoming more of a good guy than I had originally intended. I intended him to be a little more of a badass and a little more unlikable, and I just ended up, you know, he was always more of just like kind of the rascal with the heart of gold. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you mentioned a few minutes ago about the notes. I remember one note that I do come across that always makes me laugh. For the ongoing series, one of the directives I had for myself was make Frost a bad guy again. Remind people that he's not always likable, that he can be a scumbag. And, you know, I did that from time to time, but he was usually pretty likable.
Yeah, what I found with that guy, I liked Frost a lot as a character, and what got me was that, you know, because just everybody else hated him, and you almost had this idea, this sense that all the other characters knew that he wasn't a likable guy, but then he kind of became an underdog, and you're kind of like, oh, I feel bad for him, you know? So
Exactly. So I kind of played that, I kind of overplayed that a little bit, but
So now, you like I mentioned, you had this success with Dynamo 5 earlier, and that's been, you know, it's just coming out of its first year, right? And has having a book like Dynamo 5 with some success under it make this decision a little easier that you've got something else to focus your time on? Or, you know, if Dynamo 5 wasn't in the mix, would you, you know, try to squeeze out some more Noble Causes?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it does make it easier, definitely. And it, one thing it taught me is that it is easier to launch a new book than to retool an old one.
Right.
And in terms of just numbers-wise, you know, I think Gilda Ray and I will have more success in terms of just getting more readers to check us out with a brand new concept with a number one than we were seeing on Noble Causes. You know, despite all our efforts to convince people it was a good place to jump on. So, yeah, so it does make it easier. And if Dynamo 5 wasn't in the mix, yeah, I don't know if I would be ending it or not.
Yeah. So having the two books kind of juggling between the two, how do you balance your time between – they're kind of like having two children, you know, like did you – you know, did because Dynamo 5 was kind of taking off in the past year, did you kind of give that a little more attention, a little more creative juice than you did to Noble Causes or
– No, they were pretty even. I mean, it was just really, you know, whichever book needed – you know, whichever artist is ready for a script, that's what I was concentrating on. And in this past year, it was probably Dynamo or Noble Cause has probably got a little more attention just because of all the effort we put into retooling it and new character designs and new character introductions and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Dynamo 5, after the first 6 months or so, was up and running, and we had a nice stable creative team, and you know, things are moving right along. You know, just the last couple issues, Mahmoud and I, the artist, have kind of changed the way we work a little bit. And, you know, I'm writing kind of more Marvel-style plots that are much more loose and let him have more freedom with how he lays out the issue, basically. And that's, you know, it's even quicker for me to write that way. And gives him a lot more freedom and gives me lots of pleasant surprises when the artwork comes in.
Yeah.
So in some respects, it's easier to work that way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Dynamo 5, I snapped up right when it came out and knowing that it came out of the Noble Causes universe and stuff like that. It's interesting because, you know, both Noble Causes and Dynamo 5 have like their team format, but there's also a family element to it.
Right.
Is, you know, like I imagine that's a theme that you're obviously is on your mind and that's why you're doing it. But where does that concept come from?
I don't know. I mean, it is something that I just seem drawn to. And I mean, I'm not, you know, maybe I need therapy. I don't know. I mean, you know, my parents are divorced and so I grew up with step siblings and step parents and that sort of thing. But you know, it's not something that I consciously think about. It's just my worldview, I guess. And it's just kind of a ready-made supporting cast, and I do like ensemble casts more than a solo character. Although when Yildiray and I, our new book is going to be a solo character, I think, to change things up. But it wasn't when I created Dynamo 5. It wasn't that I sat down and said I want to do another book about families. I just wanted to do another superhero team, and I had this idea about, you know, the illegitimate offspring of a superhero. And you know, it turned out to be a family, but that was just a really good hook for a book.
Basically that one sentence is what sold me on that book, is that it's just, you know, what if Superman had illegitimate kids and they all had powers? And it's like,
exactly.
It's great. And what's interesting in the first year of reading the book, it really started off really strong, and then now we're kind of at a point where what issue are we up to? 13 came out recently.
Fifteen.
So we're, you know, you're at a point now where you've already kind of broken the team up. How much of Dynamo 5 do you have plotted out, or is there a map that you're going along? I know you're probably not going towards an end like a book like Y or something like that.
But I mean, I've just been giving that a lot of thought lately because. You know, we did do the whole team breaks up and a new team takes its place thing, and we did it a lot earlier than normally happens in comics, but I think that's kind of neat.
That's exactly what I thought. I'm like, oh, they're going here this early. Wow.
Exactly. And it is, you know, I don't think I'm spoiling anything when I say it is temporary. Obviously, the core team will be back pretty soon. And I do have some pretty specific ideas that I know we're going for the next, you know, 6 months or so. And you know, I haven't announced this, so here's a little exclusive for you. After, let's see, issue 19 is the end of our current story arc. And then after that, we're going to do a zero issue. That's going to be like a 99-cent zero issue thing. Cool. That will be like a primer on the book and origin recap and all that kind of stuff to, you know, be a good jump on point for people. And then that will build the foundation in the zero issue will be laid for issue 25, which will be a big double-sized, you know, anniversary issue kind of thing. So
great.
And we've got some cool stuff planned for that whole arc. So it should be pretty cool.
Cool, excellent. So and have you been, you know, like I said, Dynamo 5, when it first came out, it kind of blew a lot of people away. Have you been happy with the momentum that it's gotten in terms of readers and feedback? I mean, are sales continuing? Is it getting the attention that I think it deserves, or...?
It is. I mean, you know, in comics that aren't Marvel and DC, there's always room for sales to be better.
Right.
But But, you know, we are happy with where it's at. It's not in a danger of being canceled or anything like that. It's, you know, it's supporting itself. So we're satisfied, but we're not, you know, complacent. I guess, you know, the zero issue is there to get more eyes on the book and to give, you know, people a chance to check it out. And you know, for, you know, 99 cents, it's a pretty good bargain.
Right. And, absolutely. I mean, I think we saw that with Invincible, where I think it was at issue 42, where it was kind of just a, you know, get on board now type thing. And
totally. That's totally what I'm ripping off.
Yeah, nice. Well, it's all in the family, you know, it's all in the same.
It is. I mean, I came up with the idea with Robert Kirkman. We were on the phone, and he always said, what do you want to zero issue? Well, yeah, you should do that. And, you know, he's one of the other, he's like the godfather of Noble Causes and Dynamo 5. I always
really?
Bounce ideas off of him and stuff. Oh, yeah. I mean, just you know, he's there with his... any advice he has, or and not so much for story direction, but just from a, you know, publishing, marketing side of things, and just that kind of thing, just stuff he's had success with, and that kind of thing, just artist ideas you know, all kinds of stuff. He's a good guy to pick his brain.
Yeah, I mean, that's because not to go too you know, behind the curtain-y kind of thing, but
sure.
I mean, I know for a lot of us, the creation of comic books is a bit of a mystery, and that's something that I'm often fascinated with, you know, both in the mechanical, like I'm a bit of a process junkie and into lettering and crap like that, but also, I mean, the idea that, you know, like you jump on the phone with Kirkman and chat over marketing ideas and things like that, how much of a support network does both your friends who are creators as well as just Image provide, and you know, is that kind of a way to, you know, because I imagine you kind of sit in your home and write your scripts and it's somewhat isolating. Is that a way to kind of virtually create an office, almost, so to speak, or some sort of, you know, peer environment?
To an extent, yeah. I mean, and a lot of it's done through email, but sometimes it's easier to just get on the phone. You know, I always bounce stuff off my mood. You know, since he's a co-creator, he's always got to sign off on stuff. But, you know, Kirkman's a big one. Brian Vaughn, I'm always there bouncing stuff off him. I mean, Brian, I'll usually talk more story ideas with and just, you know, oh, what do you think about this? Is it too stupid, or, you know, is it too soon to do this, that kind of thing? And then the Image guys are really more about, you know, I don't really pester them with actual story stuff, but it's more the, you know, the business side of things, the publishing side, and, you know, what do you think about taking this month off, or, you know, is it too soon to do the next trade, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so they're available. They're really busy, so sometimes it's kind of hard to get their attention. I'll have to send multiple emails occasionally, but that's just the nature of the business. I mean, they've got God knows how many books all pestering them with those kind of emails.
Right, so. I'm sure. And you've got, and so Dynamo 5 is not the only one, but also Gemini has been out recently. How have you, that's been a limited miniseries. What is it, 4 issues, I believe, right?
It's going to be 5.
Okay, 5. And that's more of a solo character. You know, how's that launch been?
It's been good. I mean, it launched okay. The numbers weren't fantastic. And it's, you know, we haven't helped things because it's kind of gotten off schedule a bit. So it's, you know, issue 1 came out and 2 came out sort of on time, I think, but 3 still isn't out, and it's been, you know, it's a good 2 months late at this point, I think. And it's one of those things that if the book had been, if it was a monthly, I'd be a little more worried, and I would, you know, we'd take steps to get it back on track. We'd do a fill-in issue, or we'd, you know, take a month off from soliciting or something. But it's a mini-series, and the thing just looks so damn good. I mean, John draws, I mean, his art is so detailed. And our colorist, who goes by FCO, is amazing. I mean, John found him, and Kirkman has since kind of stolen him away. He's now coloring Invincible and Brit.
Is that why the book's late? Because it's not colored?
No. No, it's a variety of issues.
Blame Kirkman. Go ahead. It's okay.
No. But just that he's that good is my point. So it's worth waiting for, I think, and because it's a miniseries, so we're, you know, it is still going to come out, and, you know, we had talked about, oh, do we want to just, you know, finish it up as a trade, but, you know, that was something I consulted with Image about, and they're like, no, just, if you can keep doing it, finish the miniseries, and then we'll do a trade, and, you know, hopefully, and get it out there, so all 5 issues will come out, but it's, you know, I'd be lying if I said it was going to be on time.
Right. Yeah. Well, fair enough. I mean, it's not like we're not used to it in the comic industry. I mean, I know from a fan.
I know, and that's a lame. Yeah. I hate even settling for it. You know, that's just, it's not cool. But you know, it is what it is.
Right. So how much, you know, when doing like a mini series or even doing an ongoing like Noble Causes of Dynamo 5, you know, the changing landscape of the business and you know, doing a monthly book, and then, you know, how much of that is planning for the ultimate trade, and how does the balance of what you put out between trades and issues kind of play? Because, you know, we're definitely moving in a direction where there are books that, you know, like I believe Dynamo 5 is a book that everybody should be reading in monthly issues, but it also reads great in trades.
Yeah, and it's thank you. It's a tough, you know, tightrope to walk, because we want to get the trades out there because they are popular and a lot of people read books that way, but we don't want to kind of cannibalize the monthly sales by putting the trades out too quickly. So, you know, I don't know that we found the perfect balance of how soon to release trades. I know Marvel releases them like immediately.
Well, they've got this whole elaborate hardcover trade, you know, like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Plan.
And they've also, I mean, they're a huge company. I'm a dude. So it's harder, you know, we have to plan these things really carefully. So it's, it is a juggling act. And I do, you know, the term right for the trade is so misused, I think. I mean, the trade's a viable, you know, publishing model these days. So I do write for the trade. And when I say that, I mean that when I'm plotting out my stories, I do put in breaks every 5 or 6 or 7 issues where, you know, the trades will happen. It doesn't mean that I take an idea and say, okay, let's see if I can expand this into 6 issues to fit in a trade. It's that I, you know, create my ideas knowing that they're going to fall into those same kind of chunks. I mean, it's... You know, most comics are 22 pages, 23, whatever. That's like arguing that, oh, comic writers, they're just writing in these 23-page formats, so it fits in that book. You know, it's so artificial. Or, you know, well, of course they are. That's, you know, it's, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It just means that it is a structure. It is kind of a guideline you work towards. And our first issue had 7, or our first trade had 7 issues in it. Our second had 6. The third, I think, will also have 6. Right. And so it varies. I mean, there was one, let's see here. Yeah, because the second trade almost ended with issue 12, because that was the end of the big fight. Right. And then 13 was kind of an epilogue, sort of, you know, downtime issue thing. And as I wrote it, I thought, you know, this almost works better as an epilogue to the previous arc rather than the first chapter of a new trade. And so we just decided at the last minute, yep, let's put it in the second trade, and then the third trade will start with issue 14 instead of 13. Right. And, you know, so it's organic that way. It is up to us, I guess.
Yeah, I think this is, I mean, it's the pros and cons of the transparency of the comic book industry, is that we're now, as, you know, diehard fans are so aware of how the business works. And so so when we see a 6-issue arc, we know it's going to be a trade. And I know and because of late books, I know a lot of people, and like Connor from iFanboy is the same way, mainly with a lot of Image books, is that he won't even bother in issues. He'll wait for the trade because there's no guarantee that they'll ever make a trade. So, you know, it's a tough road to hoe. But I thought it was really interesting with Volume 1 of Dynamo 5 how you had 7 issues, but the price point was $9.99, which made it almost impossible not to give up.
Yeah, exactly. And, and you know, that was the – and I've seen some other creators, you know, that seems to be kind of the Image plan now. Right. And that's something else I ripped off from Kirkman. I think his first Walking Dead was $9.99, if I'm not mistaken. And now I think Firebreather's the same way, and you know, some other trades. And it's good. I mean, it gets you, it gives you a good entry into the series. You know, we can't afford to make all the trades that cheap. Right. I think our second was $15. Uh-huh. And the other thing we're doing is in our monthly issues, you know, we have the letters paid, we have pinups, we have sketches. Uh-huh. I do like a monthly essay on, you know, things that influence me as a writer. Right. And none of that's in the trade paperbacks. I mean, sometimes the pinups are, just if we have to fill pages, but that's just for the monthly book, for you know, to help the readers who are helping us and give them a little something. And we're going to start putting some backup stories in Dynamo 5 as well, just
cool.
5-page stories. Yeah. Issue 17 has a Captain Dynamo flashback story. And then We're also working on a Slingshot solo story that'll be in one of the issues. And I haven't decided whether those are going to be in the trade or not. I can kind of make a case both ways.
Right. So how is the audience kind of broken out to you? I mean, do you get the feeling that more people are picking up the trades, or that they're, you know, going to conventions, you get a lot of people who buy the monthlies, or do you have any indication of how people are consuming your product?
I don't know. I mean, the numbers are there. I right. can find out. I can call Image and get the numbers. But really, I just, you know, I let them worry about that. Obviously, I get more feedback on the monthly issues because the people who buy the monthlies are the ones who write letters and who send me email and who post on message boards. The trades, you don't get nearly as much feedback on because those are people who are more kind of traditional readers who aren't there on message boards all the time and stuff. But it's healthy in both respects, I think. Yeah. So I'm as long as you're reading it, I'm happy.
Yeah, cool. So it's interesting because, you know, with the internet and with the internet, and you've got, and you relaunched kind of your suite of websites this year as well.
Yep.
You know, kind of acknowledging the fact that the conversation with readers is so much easier now. You mentioned earlier you don't pander to readers, but I mean, obviously as a writer and as the creator, you're listening to what they're liking, what they're not liking. How much does that affect what your plans go? Yeah.
I'm trying to think. It affects some things. I mean, I know that Scrap is very popular in Dynamo 5, so
right.
she gets a lot of attention. And, I mean, it helps. You know, Mahmood loves drawing her, so
yeah.
we're always eager to put Scrap on a cover.
She's great. That one cover with the logo is just great, yeah.
Yeah, that one turned out so much better than I thought it would. I mean, I really thought it was just sort of... I could be wrong, but I think it was my idea.
Yeah.
And it was really just kind of a toss-off, like, I don't know what else to do this issue. Let's have her holding up the logo. It'll be easy to draw. And I've gotten so many compliments on it. I mean,
well, because it's
Ron just did it really well.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an iconic image. I mean, it's funny because I wrote, I think last week on iFanboy.com, I was answering some letters or something, and somebody asked what were my favorite covers, and the cover that's always reached out to me was the old Neil Adams X-Men covers when the character would reach out of the scene and grab the logo and crumble it or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And to me, that felt like an homage to that, and it was just done so elegantly. It was done so well. So,
yeah, they really, I mean, turned kind of a throwaway idea into something really cool. And,
yeah, that's neat.
We've also got on my website. You'll see we have a link to a Dynamo 5 T-shirt site we made.
Oh yeah,
and I think we're going to make a T-shirt of that, just a white tee with her holding up the logo on it. Would look pretty sweet, I think.
Yeah, totally. But it's cool how you can collaborate and do different things and take a risk and put something out there. Do you feel as if, you know, by being the creator and the sole, you know, kind of, not publisher, but the guy, you know, steering it,
right.
that you have the freedom to do that and to change, make things at the last minute? I mean, is that a little more freeing? Is that, again, another reason to go the creator-owned route, or...?
Yeah, I mean, it is freeing. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, you give yourself enough rope to hang yourself because
right.
it's, you know, if it's a bad idea, people may not tell you.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, well, if it sucks, it's our fault too. But yeah, and, you know, the Image guys are really good about, you know, if we do have questions, if what do you think about this cover? And they'll always weigh in.
Right.
But usually only when asked. I mean, they don't usually just approach me and say, oh, by the way, that cover you turned in is terrible.
Right.
So it's good. But, yeah, it is nice to have that freedom to do what we want. And it is – I never realized how tough it is to come up with covers for a team book every month, just like, God, what are they doing this month? I mean, what are they – are they standing there? Are they coming out at you? Or are they,
well, and that's one thing that I've always – a huge, you know, pet peeve of mine is that I'm a big fan of the cover should depict the action inside the book.
Right.
And quite often we've had people doing that are just cover artists and they're turning in covers that have the characters, but they've got nothing to do with what goes on inside. Like, where do you net out on that? I think you're kind of more on my side of things, even though that one cover didn't have anything to do with it, but it was a great cover.
Yeah.
But
it did.
Oh, right. True. Yeah.
I didn't even plan on this, but somebody was pointing out how, like, oh, in that issue, Scrap is the one holding the team together and she's literally propping up Dynamo 5 and the logo is the cover is like a symbolic interpretation of that, and I was
it's
like,
"Totally true."
I didn't plan that, but okay, sounds good. Yeah, great. I agree. They should be story driven, but I don't want to run the risk of spoiling the story in that sense. And sometimes, I mean, if the story you know, with this substitute Dynamo 5 team, there's an issue where they, you know, have a pretty big battle and don't come out on the right side of it. So the cover is them just kind of lying in ruin. And it's, you know, it's story driven, but at the same time, it just kind of, it's a team shot. So it's like, you know, it could be taken either way. And so sometimes it's harder than you think to do those story driven covers without giving away something you don't want to give away in the issue. And even if it's just the team fights a bad guy, then the cover could just look like a generic, oh, they're fighting a bad guy cover, which, right, you know, is almost as generic as the team standing there in a heroic pose, you know. Right. It's not much more original. Right. So it is tough.
And how much of a factor do you think is the evolving of the comic reader themselves? I mean, we all grew up reading, you know, Neil Adams or Walt Simonson or whatever kind of insert right. favorite creator from the 70s, 80s, 60s here.
Right.
But the comic reader now is, I don't want to say is smarter, but I think evolved is the right term. You know, is it harder to make comics for readers these days? Or?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not something I consciously think about, at least.
Right.
If anything, well, I don't know why I said it's easier, because I wasn't making comics in the past, but I guess what I do and what I find most satisfying, and what people seem to respond to in my work, is comics that are a little bit of a throwback to when we were kids,
right.
To the 80s, to when, you know, when books weren't mired in crossovers and just resurrecting your favorite character and that sort of thing. When it was more, you know, you could read the Teen Titans because you wanted to read the Teen Titans, and you know, the rest of the DC universe didn't cross over into the book every month and that sort of thing. And the same with the X-Men and the, you know, Legion or whatever. And so it's what I try to accomplish with Dynamo 5 is to give people a book that is just, you know, it's self-contained. I mean, it does take place in this kind of Image universe thing, but it's still a book you can read on its own, and everything you need to know is in that book. And I think that there are people who are a bit disillusioned, and that appeals to them. The sophistication of the fans, and like you said, that the curtain has been pulled back to an extent. So that is, it does make things complicated at times, but not to a huge degree.
Well, even in the themes, I mean, Dynamo 5, Dynamo 5 attracts me because I was a big X-Men fan, and it reminds me of what I liked about the X-Men. But you've got, sure. you've got infidelity in a marriage, you've got, family issues, you've got, you're dealing with some fairly mature issues within, in between the punching. So.
Right. That's the thing. The book is kind of schizophrenic, because on one hand, it's just a straight up superhero action book, but it does have these weird ties to, you know, it's just kind of mired in adultery and infidelity and that sort of thing. And so I have to kind of chuckle when people all say, like, oh, this would make a great TV show, is Hollywood. And I'm like, well, I don't, you know, I'd love it if it were a TV show, but it's a little harder to make than you'd think because of that. You know, movies like Dark Knight are changing this, but people do see superheroes and they don't think, oh yeah, people cheating on each other having affairs and that sort of thing. So it is kind of tough. So you're right. In that sense, it's a little more sophisticated.
Right. I mean, and it's interesting because, I mean, Hollywood seems to be the big end game for a lot of the comic creators these days, because that's where, like, the kind of money is and, you know, get a movie or TV deal type thing. So when you're doing it, I mean, I get the impression from you that that would be nice, but you're writing comics and you're here for comics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there's something I hate more than seeing a new book be announced and you're like, oh, that is so obviously somebody's failed movie pitch or something that they want to be a movie and they'll put out two issues of the comic and that's it. I'm definitely here for the comics, and, you know, if something gets, you know, I have representation in Hollywood and Noble Causes was optioned a couple times, and that's great. You know, I'll happily cash a check for that, but I'm not going to be hung up on making sure that it's true to the comic and all that kind of stuff. You know, if they option it, they have the right to do whatever they want with it. And I'm going to still be making the comic.
But
that's the other thing I can't stand, is when the comic suddenly changes to reflect the movie.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like when Flash got his different costume, because that's how it was in the TV show, it got all shiny and stuff.
Yep.
that sort of crap. That I can't stand that.
well, does, I mean, as a creator, does it put added pressure on you to make kind of sellable properties, or is that something that you think about when you sit down to create characters or create a concept? You know, because like something like Gemini, that could easily see that as a movie.
Yeah, and there's been some interest in it, but it's not something that I, created because I thought I could make a movie. It's, you know, I think a good idea is a good idea, and I'm very influenced by TV and movies as well. So, you know, I tend to think in that regard, but it's never, you know, like you said, it's never the end game. It's never something that I think, oh, well, this comic, this is very movie friendly. It's just I want to make a good comic, and you know, if it translates well somewhere else, you know, that's just gravy.
Right. And it's interesting because I think, I mean, the one of the things that I think sets the comic book industry apart, especially with its creators as well as within this fan, is that there's such passion behind it. I mean, you know, like just talking to you the few times we've talked, I mean, I know you and I are the same in terms of fandom. I mean, like you love comics. So, you know, like, so what are some of the comics that kind of got you to where you are today, or what were some of your inspirations, you know, kind of geek out on the comics that made you the writer you are today?
Yeah, I mean, it's Teen Titans was a huge one, you know, the Wolfman Perez stuff. I love that book. I really, this is a little bit later, I was in college when this came out, but I was really into the original New Warriors, that whole run that Fabian wrote was really good stuff. I read the X-Men as a kid as well, and liked it, but I was always more, I think, a little more of a DC fan, or a little more of a Titans fan, at least.
Interesting.
But I do have a big, healthy run of the X-Men. I think I got on board right around the Paul Smith era.
Nice.
Is when I got into it. And yeah, boy, that was some good stuff.
Yeah, it was a good time to be a good time to be a fan. That's for sure.
Yes, it was. And I always liked team books, but those were the, you know, Firestorm I read a lot as a kid. Yep. But I was never big into the big, you know. I never collected Spider-Man or Superman or Batman or any of the big guns. I was more of a team guy.
Well, and I think that's so interesting that how that's developed into your comics, where you're writing team books. I mean, that's
exactly. And that's why I do want to branch out and do more solo characters. That's why Gemini was a solo character, and whatever Yildiray and I do next will be a solo character, just to make things interesting and stretch myself. Right. But also, John Sable Freelance was a big book that I loved. Mike Grell from First Comics. I was a little bit older, but all the Mark Waid stuff, his Flash run, his Captain America, that stuff is just still, you know, inspires me to this day. It's really good stuff.
How good was that Captain America run? They just put out the trade of that, and
it's fantastic. I mean, it's so, he has such a great marriage, Mark does, of, you know, character and plot, where it's just seamless. I mean, he just takes you exactly where he wants you to go. It's really good.
So when you read other creators and look at you know, the works of like a Mark Waid or somebody else, you know, and kind of identifying what they're good at in terms of writing, you know, does that influence your approach at all or anything? Because I find it really interesting, because I feel as if you're writing, you know, like you write team players really, really well, but there's also an emotional element that I don't get from other writers within the characters and within the character development. There's this idea of a vulnerability. Is that just something that you're interested in, or is that just comes naturally, or?
I guess it just comes naturally. I mean, I want the characters to feel real. I want people to be able to relate to them and to think that. I mean, with the Dynamo 5 kids, they're, you know, the book's been going on for a year and a half now or so, but they're still pretty new to the superhero game, and they come from completely normal backgrounds. So while obviously it's a superhero book and they have powers and costumes and, you know, they're muscular and very fit, but I still try to instill it with a sense of humanity and of kind of normalcy, that this stuff is weird to them, and they have real fears and concerns and affections and that sort of thing. It just feels more well-rounded to me. It gives the characters more than just being superheroes. And that's what I liked about a lot of those books we just talked about, is that the characters were more than just their costumes and their powers. They had more going on, and that's something that just appeals to me as a writer, I guess. Right.
So, I mean, do you ever step like halfway through a script and step back and just recognize how ridiculous the superhero world actually is, and then does that then mold their reactions? Or
yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, yeah, it I guess it just comes with the territory.
Yeah.
I remember, this isn't quite what you're talking about, but New Mutants, when that book, the original New Mutants, when they had Magic on the team, and she had those little portals, they could she could teleport the whole team anywhere.
Right.
And when I was a fan, I used to think that was so lazy. You know, the X-Men had the Blackbird and the Titans had their T-Jet. And I was like, it's just such a cheat that she can just take them anywhere. But I am a writer. It's a damn nice cheat to have. to just have them pop around and not have to worry about travel time and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty nice.
It's a nice to have a plot device. It opens up a whole new world of backgrounds, right?
and especially with Dynamo 5, where they're, the kids are all live in different parts of the country and continent, really. So it helps people to get them together at a moment's notice.
Yeah, I mean, you've introduced like a teleportation system or whatever that allows them to do that, and so that's funny, and I love the underwater base, and again, I mean, like it's funny because the underwater base is great, but then you go and flood it way earlier than I thought it would be flooded.
And I toyed with whether is that going to be the end of it, or are we going to just not see that again? But I was like, I like it, they vacuumed it out and got the mildew smell out and it's back in action.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the balance of the fact that people burst through walls and they fight and punch and kind of deal with problems physically, but then down to the minutia of the base smells because it flooded and you can't get that mildew out. It just cracks me up. That's great.
Thanks.
So I mean, we're talking a lot about story and stuff like that, but I wanted to kind of touch upon the artists you work with. The past year, I've been flabbergasted that you have found names that I've never heard of, and they're just great. Like where I don't want to give away your secret, but where are you finding these great artists?
The secret ingredient is turkey.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, Mahmood is who I found originally, and I had seen his work posted online in various places, DeviantArt and digital webbing and stuff, and I always thought he was fantastic, and he almost seemed too good to be true. I never contacted him to collaborate because I thought, he's really good and he's not working on anything. He's got to be a jackass, or he's unreliable. It takes him a week to do a drawing. Something. There's something wrong here.
Right.
And then when I started developing Dynamo 5, and I think I asked Ryan Ottley if he had anybody he could recommend. I needed an artist for this thing.
Yep.
And he said, there's this guy online you should check out, Mahmood. And so I did. And, just kind of based on Ryan's suggestion, I contacted him, and he is too good to be true. He's fantastic. He's easygoing and great to work with, and disciplined and talented, and I couldn't ask for anything more. And it was through him. He's really good friends with Yildiray. They've been friends since they were teenagers, and Yildiray is also an incredibly gifted artist, and they both live in Turkey. And so when I needed somebody to take over Noble Causes, I tapped Yildiray for that, and he's been a joy to work with as well.
That's great. I mean, because you hear so many stories about people, like the South American artists, and now there's a whole crop coming out of Spain and stuff like that.
Yep.
So, when I heard these guys from Turkey, it just blew my mind because they, it's good. It's good stuff. I mean, they Dynamo 5 and Noble Causes both had what I look for when I look for want to buy a comic from an art standpoint is I look for something that's a unique, a unique approach. Of course, good anatomy and all that kind of stuff, but something that has as much personality as the writing going into it. And both those artists totally brought that, and so
they're both just, and they keep getting better. I mean, it's Mahmood's drawing Dynamo 5/17 right now, and it's just blowing me away.
Yeah.
I mean, his character's facial expressions and stuff are so good. And Yildiray, I really turned him loose. He's doing an issue of Noble Causes now that has a huge fight with Slate, who's our big Rocky guy, and Invincible. And there's a whole chunk in the issue where I just said, okay. They're at a construction site, and here's 7 pages where they just beat the crap out of each other. Just do whatever you want, and have them throwing dump trucks at each other, and just whatever. And he hasn't gotten to that point yet, but I can't wait because I know he's just going to knock my socks off.
Cool, very cool. So, it's not the first time you mentioned Invincible is going to be in that issue of Noble Causes, and there was a flashback Dynamo 5 issue where there was a big gala and the Savage Dragon was there and stuff like that. I know we've talked about before when we talked in Seattle at the Emerald City Con about having other characters. characters, you know, appear in there. Is it nice to be able to draw on that kind of image verse out there, or is it?
Yeah. It's really nice, and it's you know, especially with a character like Invincible, who's you know the kind of the most popular superhero in Image right now,
right.
Or arguably, I guess.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's. And just because of the publishing history of both Noble Causes and Invincible, the characters do have a history, I mean, especially with Zephyr Noble.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's kind of a commercial guest appearance. I'm hoping that Invincible's fans will check it out. But, you know, there is a storytelling, you know, reason here. It will make sense when you read the issue that it's not just a cash grab. It's not just having Wolverine in the cover for the hell of it. It's,
right.
You know, it's a little deeper than that. And yeah, it's great to be able to do that. You know, I would probably do it more often. I think Kirkman kind of reins me in a little bit because, you know, if it were up to me, we'd cross-pollinate even more. But right. Obviously, I have more to gain than he does.
Right, so yeah. And it's funny because, I mean, I'm a big fan of the shared universe. I'm a big fan of the Marvel kind of approach. Like, I loved reading the old essentials from the 70s, and you just see Thor fly by, and it's like, where's Thor going? Find out in issue number 182. And it's like, you know, but I understand that alienates a lot of readers. It does. Yeah.
And that's, I don't want to do that. And so I'm glad that Kirkman puts the kibosh on that occasionally.
Yeah.
Because that's one of my pet peeves right now, especially in Marvel and DC, is that it's almost impossible to read a single comic and, you know, without following the bigger.
Yeah, you've got a follow basically a maze of different books to read, and somebody like me, it helps because I'm reading them all. But I can't imagine, you know,
exactly.
So speaking of Kirkman and Invincible stuff like that, so you know, I kind of mentioned earlier, the big Kirkman's whole treaty about creator-owned books, and then you know when we talked in Seattle, you know, I'd asked if you were going to go back, you know, ever think about going back to Marvel DC, and you said that really wasn't where you were at. So here we are, it's end of summer 2008. How psyched are you to be at Image? I mean, like, are you pretty psyched?
I'm incredibly psyched. Yeah. I mean, it's never been better. I mean, I was really happy when I heard that Robert had been made a partner. I mean, it's a natural choice. He's I've never seen anybody that interested in what Image has going on than Kirkman. I mean, he's genuinely cares about not just his books, but the whole company, and what they're doing. And, like I said, he's been kind of helping me behind the scenes and just, you know, chiming in on all kinds of stuff with Noble Causes and Dynamo 5 since day one, for years. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, nothing's really changed. I mean, he's in a partner now, but it's just been kind of formalized,
but,
I guess.
But as a creator, and you're one of the first creators that I've talked to who are firmly established at Image ever since all that kind of stuff, hit. Being on the inside, do you get a feeling that like things are, that you're going up the roller coaster and like things are just going to get better from here? Or is there like a sense of energy from inside the quote unquote walls of Image? Or?
Yeah, there is. You know, I don't have that much contact with them just because of the nature of the business.
Sure.
I mean, I don't want to be sucking their time just by getting on the phone. Hey, what's the gossip today? I do get the sense, I mean, with the big Image United crossover and, I do think that they're having some success getting some more creators to try to do books at Image and stuff and, just making the whole Image publishing line stronger. And, I think it's a really good time and I am very excited, about just the company in general and being there, being part of it.
Yeah.
I've been there for, almost 8 years now. It feels like a lifetime.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I've seen something, as a reader, as a fan, you've got whenever he thinks of Image and it's Spawn and Savage Dragon and Witchblade and whatever else Silvestri has. It's almost as if there are I almost see like three different Images in that there's the original kind of founders work, but then there's superhero work like Invincible, like Dynamo 5, honestly to me are more interesting than except for Savage Dragon, I'll always be a Dragon fan. But but the other stuff, I think the stuff that you're doing and that Kirkman's doing is way more engaging and way more kind of current. But then they've got this whole other stuff that is just not superhero based that is so kind of out there.
Right.
So if you ever wanted to do something non-superhero, I mean, you're in the right place to do it. And is that something you've ever considered? I mean, do you have inklings to do noir books like everybody else? Or?
I did one. I did a mystery book at Image called Dodge's Bullets.
That came out.
A couple years ago. And we're doing a follow-up, just a little 5-page Dodge's Bullet kind of mini mystery thing that I'm just going to run in the back of Dynamo 5 just because it's my book and I can.
Yeah, nice.
For fun. And it's being drawn right now. And I hope to be doing, I kind of have the idea for a, not really a noir book, but kind of an adventure book. Just, you know, no superpowers, no sci-fi, nothing, just a kind of a, you know, I said that John Sable was my favorite book as a kid, so just kind of my take on that sort of book, just a kind of soldier of fortune, adventurer kind of thing.
Cool.
So I'm slowly putting that together. I have some ideas and some names, and see if I can make a go of that.
Cool.
So yeah, the short answer is yes, I do want to do more than just superheroes, and I am at the place to do it. Image is the place.
Yeah. Cool. Excellent. So, all right. So, I don't. You know, we've been talking for a while. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. But so, Dynamo 5 ongoing. Two trades are out. I mean, I can't recommend it any more than that. Gemini will finish eventually, right?
Yeah, Gemini is still going. And, you know, we talked about artists earlier, and I want to give a shout-out to John Samariva, who's the Gemini artist, who is also – he's not Turkish, but he's Australian.
Oh,
and
cool.
He is also fantastic. And John got his start doing a Noble Causes backup way back in the day, like in the second miniseries, I think. And then he went off to do work at Dark Horse and did some work in a couple other places. And then he just contacted me out of the blue and said, hey, you know, well, we should do a book together. Here's my current stuff.
Wow.
Sent me some samples. I sent that to Image, and Eric Larson and Eric Stevenson both said, wow, you need to have this guy do a book right now. Like, he needs to be working.
Yeah.
And that was the birth of Gemini. And I love working with John. He's awesome.
So that's how it happens. Just somebody emails you and says, hey, check out my stuff, huh?
It does, yeah. I mean, and, you know, a lot of times stuff they're showing me isn't very good. But but in John's case, it was very, very good.
Yeah.
And I was really happy.
When the art's not so good, is that an awkward response? Or, I mean, is it?
It is. Because, you know, I want to respond, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to just ignore them. But, you know, I just want to be honest.
And, right,
and I try to be honest. I, you know, if anybody asks me my opinion on something, I give it. I don't want to shine them on and be like, oh, yeah, it looks great. Keep it up. You know, I want to look, you know, if I'm going to take the time to respond to you and to, you know, give you any kind of critique, it's going to be what I really think. I mean, I'm not going to be rude about it, but at the same time, you know, you asked, so I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Right, and that's part of the creative process. Is that it's a craft, and I have no artistic ability whatsoever, you know. But I the one thing I do recognize is that people have got to be able to take criticism and be able to learn from it. Yeah, so
totally.
I don't envy you being in the position of having to give that out, though.
Yeah, it sucks, and it does suck because a lot. You know, I'm not an artist,
right.
So I can tell when something doesn't look right, but. There's not much I can tell you for how to get better or worse, why it looks wrong.
Right.
You know, I have a hard time articulating that, so it can be tough, but I try.
Yeah, I don't know anatomy, so I can't do that either. So,
yeah.
Cool. So, so Noble Causes is going to wrap up with issue 40. What issue are we on now? I don't even remember.
We 35 comes 36. Out next month.
Yeah,
36 or not next month, next week.
Okay,
which is also.
Yeah.
So yeah, 36 is out next week,
okay.
And then then that's the 40 is solicited for November, and will hopefully be out by the end of November. We're running a bit behind, but it'll definitely be out by December.
Oh wow! Okay, so 36. Oh wow! So it's going to go quickly. Wow! So it's going to be all done before the end of the year. Wow! That's crazy.
Yep. It's once I made a decision to wrap it up, I was like, let's just do it. We'll tie things up.
And you and Yildiray are going to be doing something else down the road. I mean, anything
we are. Yeah, and it's tough, you know, because I want to get working on it, but Yildiray still got, you know, 4 issues of Noble Causes to draw.
Right.
So we don't have much time to develop a new idea. I don't want to be having him get sidetracked and not drawing Noble Causes. So we haven't put a whole lot of thought into what we're doing next. But like I said, we know we want it to be a solo character. Mm. And it will be, you know, superhero related. So it will kind of exist in the same universe as Dynamo 5 and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Completely
self-indulgent question, but do you love having a little universe, like a Faberverse? I mean...
it's kind of neat. I mean, it is cool just to have my own little... you know, I have an established, you know, home for the criminally insane kind of thing that I can use whenever I need to. And, you know, my own, flag, which is kind of my version of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, just my own stuff that I can play with, my own toys, I guess. And you don't have to ask anybody's permission to use them, and it's pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah, no, that's the dream. I mean, as somebody who grew up reading the same books as you and cannot write for my life, you're very lucky.
it's fun. I mean, it is. You know, I do have to rein myself in though, because I don't want to become the same kind of problems that I complain about with Marvel and DC. You know, I don't want the books to get too, you know, to crawl up their own ass, basically. You know, I want them to be accessible, and every book is somebody's first. And that's something we're going to get back to with Dynamo 5 is do more self-contained issues like we did the first six issues. You know, the last couple of months of Dynamo 5 have been more kind of a big rambling story, and I want to get a little back to basics with that book. And it's just more of a good exercise writing-wise, too, to, you know, have each issue be kind of a complete adventure.
Cool. Excellent. So is there anything else fans should be on the lookout for that I'm not aware of? Or
I don't think so. When is this going to be up?
It's going to be up first week of September. So, yeah.
All right. Well, my last parting shot will be to vote Urban Myths for Top Cow's pilot season. That's my other book. It's through Top Cow's pilot season program. Yeah. It's called Urban Myths, and you can go to topcow.com and vote for it. And if enough votes, it'll become a series.
What's the elevator pitch?
Elevator pitch is Chinatown meets Clash of the Titans. It's a world, the modern day world where the Greek gods and monsters in Greek mythology still exist, right alongside cell phones and SUVs. So it's and it follows the son of Medusa, who works as a private investigator and wears a metal mask and has snakes for hair and all that stuff, and takes cases that take him all over this kind of weird landscape filled with Greek monsters and, you know, modern day conveniences.
Very cool. I got to check that out. I got to admit, I mean, some good stuff is coming out of the pilot season this time around. I mean,
it really is. I got some tough competition.
Yeah, I mean, between your book and then Hickman's book was The Core, really. That was really interesting. And yeah, it's wow, good stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Cool. So fans should go vote for that. And where can they find you on the web?
They can find me at just jferber.com
or
dynamo5.com. They're all kind of linked together.
Cool, and we'll post the link up on the show notes for this
great
podcast. So awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jay. Really appreciate the time.
All right. So, thank you, Ron. Always a pleasure.
So that was my chat with writer Jay Ferber. So be sure to check out Noble Causes. It may be ending, but it's still worth the read, as well as the archives books and the previous trade paperbacks that came out. And I can't recommend Dynamo 5 enough. It was one of my favorite books in 2007. It's continuing to be great in 2008. Gemini is a lot of fun as well. And all the other books that Jay is going to be publishing through Image are always interesting. And don't forget to check out his Top Cow book. I actually went back and read it, and it's pretty good. I voted for it, and I encourage you to as well. So if you enjoyed this, head over to ifanboy.com, where you can check out our regular weekly Pick of the Week podcast, and you can look forward to future editions of Talksplode as we talk to your favorite comic book writers and artists. If you have any requests or anybody you want to hear from, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can send us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. So until next time, I'm Ron.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that because you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.